Welcome back to the Indie Birds. Just before we aired the interview, I thought I would explain a few things about some of the people mentioned during the interview, in case it doesn't ring a bell. Zach Braff is the actor from the show Scrubs, and he was the producer of the movie Garden State. We also talk about Joshua Radin, and his claim to fame is that he sang at Ellen DeGeneres' wedding. He had an album come out last spring, and it's doing really well. I think having Ellen as a fan has really helped him. And actually, Zach, Josh, and Carrie all went to college together. So there you have it. That's the scoop. So let's begin the interview. Let's just pretend there's a phone ringing right now. Ring, ring.
Hello.
Hi there, Carrie. This is Fern from Indie Birds at CJMQ 88.9. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for letting us take a sneak peek into your brand new album and for agreeing to speak with us, Carrie. Just letting you know, we're not live. We're recording this interview so that later on I can just add the songs that we mentioned.
Got it.
And I'm thinking we'll probably air it on the Indie Birds in about a week's time. The good news is you can say whatever you want because you can always take it back. You can just erase it or at least make
Got
you
it.
Think we did. Carrie, if I could ask, where are you right now?
I'm in my new apartment in Los Angeles, sitting in my new studio room I just built.
Was this a recent album Under Control recorded in that home studio?
This is like brand new. Just got here like a month ago, so I'm just kind of tweaking everything and getting it together for. I've actually kind of before this record's even come out, I've already started writing a new record, so it's working so far.
Wow! So you've taken some time off to work on this last album, and you're already laying down tracks for the next. So you've been busy.
Yeah.
Seemed as if you had disappeared for a while there. You just, I guess you took some time off to get introspective. What led to that? What's that all about?
It was after the kind of initial success that I had, and I, you know, it was kind of like a, you know, you get what you pay what you wish for, kind of. I mean, I started playing and got out on the road and was out on the road for like 5 years and got to, you know, tour all the time. And it was amazing. I mean, it was such a blessed kind of opportunity. But at the same time, after a while, I felt like completely disconnected from the world in a way. You know, when life was no longer about friends and songs, it was just about getting from point A to point B every day. And just, you know, kind of lost touch with a lot of things. So I stopped the last year to make this record and just kind of live again, just kind of come home and be able to, you know, to me, writing songs is just about like observing life, and I kind of wasn't living a normal human life.
Were you sort of looking for inspiration?
Yeah, absolutely. It was good to get back home and to kind of, you know, take a moment to look around and observe things and observe friends and how people around me had changed and how I had changed, and that's kind of how this record happen.
And maybe just consolidate everything you'd been through. Is that experience sort of in the fabric of this album? Can we find references to that? Is there a sort of a message to Under Control?
It's about like finding a little bit of peace in the chaos. In a lot of different ways. In like looking at kind of, you know, a lot of friends. You know, I have a lot of friends who play music too, and we kind of all came back to LA at around the same time, and I was able to look at how everybody changed, and some people were getting, you know, dark with the booze and lifestyle, and you know, some people had changed for the better, and it was really about looking around and seeing how to, for me, it's about a record really about trying to find a little bit of control. I mean, it's called Under Control.
Yeah, I was going to ask what the significance of that title was.
Yeah, I mean, it ended up being kind of naturally, a lot of the record ended up being about, like, you know, the time in your life when you have to really make decisions for your future about what kind of person you want to be and what kind of people you want to surround yourself with and what kind of life you want to live. And it's, the record is really about change. And taking and getting older and realizing what I want out of life, and that's mostly what it's about. And there's some girl songs too. So there's got to be a couple of those.
Of course. Well, let's talk a bit about the first single you've released, which is Ghost Town, and maybe after you tell us a little bit about the song, we'll play it for our listeners.
In a lot of ways, Ghost Town is kind of really feeling disconnected when I first got back to Los Angeles, and feeling like, you know, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, so I grew up in a smaller town, and kind of getting lost in and you know, the industry that happens here, and not being able to really find connection with people around me, and just kind of a little bit of paranoia kind of living in modern day life. Because everything was changing at that time. Everything was changing. Like, the country was changing. Politics were getting harder and darker, and the war, and I just felt a real disconnection to everything around me. And that song helped me with a little bit. There's a little bit of hope to it, but that song helped me get through that kind of whatever that weird feeling of fear I had at the time.
Listening to CJMQ 88.9. My name is Fern. I'm host and producer of the Indie Birds. And today we're talking to Carey Brothers about his brand new album. And we just heard the first single off of it, Ghost Town. Carey, you're known for writing incredibly beautiful love songs. Just wondering, where does that come from? You know, have you just been really lucky in love? Is this sort of a catharsis for you? What impels you?
To me, is like songs were always just therapy to me. I've never been to a therapist in my life, so I have a guitar as my therapist. So, like writing love songs more just was a natural occurrence from having a lot of disastrously failed relationships. It's very nice way to wrap my head around what had happened. I'm a bit of a closet romantic, I guess, to some degree, but it was most songs are about love. Or looking for love, or some kind of love that people are trying to find in their lives. I tended to get a little more specific, I guess, in regard to actual, relationship details. I have a song for every relationship I've had, at least.
Well, it was the very romantic Blue Eyes that put you on the map. Gary, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your involvement with the Garden State soundtrack, and then after that we'll play the song.
Well, that song was, at the time, I had been playing in Los Angeles and was kind of building a little base here and playing at the Hotel Cafe in L.A. and really kind of found a home finally playing music. And that song was kind of like the big song I had locally. I knew Zach Braff, who directed Garden State from college. We kind of didn't really know each other too well in college, but we became buddies in L.A. When he was originally working on that script, before he, was a TV star and all that, we always talked about the music for the film. And when he sent the original version of that script out, he came over to my place the night before and we made a mixtape of song ideas. He just asked me to put Blue Eyes in there, and then, the creation of that soundtrack was kind of like just a mixtape amongst friends. A lot of different friends threw song ideas out and different concerts we had seen that summer, different bands we had seen. And it was just a real naturally evolving thing. I think that the reason that soundtrack was successful is just because it wasn't, it was just very real. It was very honest. It was just a bunch of people who really care about it. There's no way you can plan on that kind of organic success. It just either happens or it doesn't. And I'm so proud to have been involved in that thing, because it's very much a once in a lifetime kind of opportunity.
Blue Eyes, sound of you.
Oh, I love that song. That's from the Garden State soundtrack. Now, it won the 2005 Grammy Award for Best Compilation Album in a Motion Picture. And it's remarkable that every singer or band that's featured on that album went on to accomplish great things, gathering millions of fans and becoming really well established in the industry. And you're no exception to that, Carrie. You know, fast forward 5 years and you've got close to 8 million listens on your MySpace. I mean, did you know that? I mean, I know some artists, you know, couldn't be bothered with managing their MySpace account, but do you check it out, or are you even aware of the amount of times your songs are being accessed by people around the world?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty, I mean, when all that kind of stuff was happening, like, I didn't have a record deal, I didn't have anything, so I was doing it. I've always been pretty proactive and done all that stuff myself, so, you know, in the same way that, you know, bands have to make flyers, you know, I had to do my MySpace. You know, I didn't have anybody doing that for me, so I kind of had to handle that stuff myself, and have tried to stay pretty active. To me, it's like, if I'm not on the road, that's the best way to stay in touch with, you know, people who are listening to music. I did a free download thing where when I was working on demos, I would just every week I would just put a new demo idea up. And as much as like the Garden State stuff, you know, helped me, like that helped a lot, because it was before people were kind of giving away music. And to me, it was like, this is just an idea I'm doing in the corner of my room. Like, why can't I put it out to the world and let people hear kind of in on the process a little bit, I guess. And it worked like a charm. One thing I didn't like about when I had my old record deal was not being able to do that anymore. So I'm really excited now that especially that I have this new studio at home, that I can just make music and press send and send it out to the world if I want to.
Yeah, I can see why businessmen in suits backing these labels wouldn't like that.
Yeah, they don't like it, but it's, you know, I mean, you know, it's these days the whole paradigm kind of has shifted with music, and the amount of work I used to do versus the amount of records I would sell, it doesn't work like that anymore. And now I realize, you know, you have to do 10 times the work, and giving out music free to people or making it really, really, really affordable is the best way to do it. And then just hope that they'll come out and see you when you're on the road, and if they like it enough, you know, maybe they'll go buy the record, the real record, if they've stolen it or gotten it for free somewhere.
You went through a lot of trouble to get out of your major label contract. Is that an idea you'd been tossing around for a while, or did you just snap?
I kind of snapped.
Okay, so what led to that?
Like, I'd done everything myself for a while, and I thought when I signed the label deal that I would just be able to write and play music, and other people would just handle everything. And I realized that I didn't really like that. I'm kind of not very good with authority, and I like to really be involved with it. I like to know the radio people. I like to know you know, the distributors. I like to know who's doing it. I like it to be like a mom and pop kind of business. Once I lost touch with that, I didn't like kind of some choices that were made. But I mean, very good people with the best of intentions, of course, but I ultimately realized I'd be better off doing it myself.
Your buddy Joshua Radin just went through it himself about a year ago. Were you both comparing notes, sharing war stories, so to speak?
Yeah, Josh and I went. We were just talking about that the other day. We went through very similar experiences, and I think now it's coming back. The idea that if, you know, you're willing to do the work, there's no reason why you shouldn't own what you do. The more you own, the more money you make, and that allows me to writing music and putting records out, and you know, whether it means that I will sell a lot less records, but if I'm making more money per record, then it doesn't really matter, you know, because I still get to go get to the audience, people who really care, and I still get to make music. And it's like, as long as I can do that, I'm fine.
Can you tell us about your collaboration with DJ Tiesto?
Oh yeah, Tiesto. You know, I didn't know anything about like dance music. I don't know anything about that world at all. Since, you know, at least since I went to raves when I was a kid, you know, and he was in LA and kind of sent me an email, and we met, and he's just this really nice guy, and I didn't know his stuff at all, and he wanted to do a remix of a song. And then he told me, you know, as I was leaving, you know, he told me his, you know, his DJ name was Tiesto, and I Googled him when I went home. The first thing I see is a picture of him in front of like 300,000 people at Carnival in Brazil. I wrote him back, and I was like, yeah, I would love to work with you. It was just amazing to just the idea that some, you know, he's touring all over the world all the time, that somewhere out in the world in, you know, somewhere in like Portugal or something tonight, my song is being played for, you know, 10,000 kids dancing all night long. It's just, it's, I mean, it's so outside the bounds of what I've done before. But it's interesting because it's really brought a whole new audience, because those kids don't necessarily listen to that when they're driving to work in the morning. So they you know, they've really kind of responded to my music. And then I did another song with Tiësto for his new record with a bunch of other artists collaborated with him on his new record. And people like Tegan and Sarah and Block Party and a bunch of other great bands were on there. And that was really fun.
I really liked the song Ride, the very first one that you worked on with Tiësto. So how about we play that right now? Comfortable with someone taking your music and making changes to it?
I mean, to me, it's like that's their creative expression. I mean, and hopefully I like it. You know, I really like what Tiësto's done with my stuff, so I'd love to keep working with him. But my thing with, I love sending out tracks and letting people really, you know, go for it. And whatever they can do creatively to change the song and kind of introduce it to a whole new world of people. I'm really going to do that with this new record. I'm going to actively get the music out to DJs and let them do whatever they want with it.
I really love covers, and I'm willing to bet that you do too. On your last album, you cover the Thompson Twins. You do another cover on this one as well. Were you thinking you could improve it? You know, this is how I would have done it.
The coolest thing about it is that I got in touch with the Thompson Twins. Being an 80s music nerd, like, I just love that. Just being able to get an email from them saying that they liked the song, I mean, that was more than I would ever have hoped for. To me, covers, it's just really about, like, finding a song that is outside of what I do and trying to figure out a way to make it sound comfortable within my style. And if I can do that, then I'm willing to cover anything.
On Under Control, you did a remake of Level 42's Something About You, which goes back to 1986. Does that song bring back memories for you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching that video on MTV when I was a kid, and I kind of rediscovered the song a couple of years ago. And it's a really funky bass line song, but there were really, really beautiful lyrics and a beautiful melody, that the 80s kind of pop production part of it, which was at the time was perfect. Kind of hid a lot of the beauty of the song to me. So I kind of wanted to do it in a different way, so to bring the words out a little more.
Well, how about we listen to that song that we're talking about, Something About You. And when we come back, I'd like to know what your favorite track is on the album.
Carved out of care, fashioned by fate. We suffer so hard from the games played once too often, but making mistakes is a part of life's imperfection. Born of the years, is it so wrong to be human after all? Draw me to the stream of undefined illusion. Those diamond dreams, they can't disguise the truth. There's something about you, baby, so right. I wouldn't be here without you, baby, tonight. If ever our love was conceived, no one could say that we didn't feel a million things and a perfect dream of life. Gone, fragile but free, we remain tender together. Not so in love, it's not so wrong, but only human after these changing years. They add to your confusion. Oh, and you need to hear the time that told the truth, because it's something about you, baby, so I'm sure.
You're listening to The Indie Birds at CJMQ 88.9. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be right back after the break with more from Carey Brothers. Welcome back to the Indie Birds. Now, I left Carey with a question to think about. What's your favorite track on this album?
I don't know. It changes. You know, it's like, who's your favorite kid? It's a tough question to ask. I think Belong is probably my
Me
favorite
too.
Song.
I love it.
Oh, good.
Okay, so let's play it right away. This is Belong from Carey Brothers' brand new album, Under Control.
Safe in the night, still dreaming of fortune.
Gonna make a prediction. That song is your next Blue Eyes. I think it's that good. You've told us it's your new favorite kid, but I'm wondering, what is it about the song that strikes you? What does
that's
it mean
probably,
to you?
That's the most, like, it's also in a way like the most acutely personal thing I think I've ever written. Like, that literally happened, you know. And I just wrote a story about what happened one night and it worked somehow. Sometimes that works.
Is that typically the way you proceed when it comes to crafting a song? I read somewhere that you're a real melody man. Exactly how does the creative process work with you?
I mean, Blonde was a little different because it all happened at once. And I mean, I was literally, it happened while sitting down outside in my courtyard at my old house, like just at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It just kind of came out. I'm so melody based. I want to find a melody that I can't get out of my head, and if I come up with a melody and after a couple of weeks, like, it's still floating in there, then I know it's working. At which point, that's when I usually start writing music. Then I'll just mumble my way through lyrics, and then at some point, you know, the right lyrics start to come to the forefront. Usually, lyrics are the last thing I do, because I was an English major, so I still think of writing words as homework. The music is the real fun.
Well, Alien actually did that for me. I couldn't get out of my head. It really is a song that weighs a ton, which is actually within the lyrics. So that's
nice.
Cool. Lives up to its own words. Sometimes it's a mixed blessing, though, because it can annoy people. It's been like 3 days. I can't get the song out of my head. All right. Well, here's our last song then, Alien. This has been really fun, Carrie. Thanks for this interview. But before we end, tell us, what are you looking forward to in the next couple months? And we especially want to know if you'll be touring up in Canada anytime soon.
Yeah, well, I'm going over to Holland to play some shows in Holland at the end of April for Lars Jansen, who's just an absolutely amazing singer-songwriter who's from L.A., but is doing very, very well over in Holland, right? She kind of really kind of got a break over there, and now is kind of coming back to North America to do her thing. But and then starting this summer. We're planning the tour right now. Hopefully beginning of the summer I'll get out on the road and be touring the States and Canada. Fingers crossed, I think we're about to do a deal in Canada for the record, so which will involve touring a lot up there, so I can't wait. Canada's always been really good to me. This is my first interview for the new record.
Cool.
Because everything starts up in the next couple of weeks. I was literally like, I'm completely unprepared, and so I just had to tell you the truth.
Great.
It'll just be a different version of what I said today.
Well, there you have it, listeners. That was Carrie Brothers, ad lib, as honest as you could be. So, when's this album coming out? What's the exact release date?
It goes out, I think March 22nd is when it's supposed to hit radio.
Yeah, but we get first dibs, right? We can play it.
Yeah, you know, play it. As long as they turn it up really loud.
Well, thank you so much, Carrie, for this